Today on Maine Calling, reaction to the presidential debate. It was billed as a consequential matchup, the first and possibly only debate between Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump. With polls showing the two candidates neck and neck at this stage in the campaign, the buildup to the debate put pressure on both of them to rise to the occasion. I'm Cindy Hahn. Today we'll discuss what each candidate set out to do and whether they achieved it. How well did they address policy issues, from the economy to abortion to immigration? We'll also talk about the optics of the debate as viewers took into account the candidates' facial expressions and demeanor. Will the debate affect the outcome of the election? Were you surprised by anything the candidates said? What stood out to you about last night's face-off? Maine Calling is coming right up.
Maine Calling is made possible by support from Maine Farmland Trust, working this summer to purchase and protect the historic Morris Farm in Wiscasset. Learn more at mainefarmlandtrust.org. By Welch and Forbes, working with clients to manage the full range of events that come with building wealth, from investments to trustee services. More at welchforbes.com. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, supporting Maine island communities through education, health, and community engagement. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. The presidential debate last night in Philadelphia between Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump was a high-stakes, highly anticipated matchup, and possibly the only debate between the two candidates during this campaign. How did each of them do? Was it a game changer in this election? This show is part of Maine Public's Your Vote 2024 coverage. Our guests are Gene Cummings, former deputy bureau chief in Washington for the Wall Street Journal, and Ron Schmidt, professor and chair of the Department of Political Science at the University of Southern Maine. We invite you to join the conversation. What did you think of the debate? Did anything that the candidates say stick with you or change your mind? Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. You can post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. So Gene and Ron, let's dig right in. Each candidate had a job to do last night. There was a lot of pressure on them. Let's first talk about whether they did it. So Gene, Kamala Harris had to come out last night and first define herself to the nation. She had to explain her policy stances, but she also had to appear presidential. And she had to not get riled up by Donald Trump. So that's a lot on her plate. How did she do at all of that?
I think that she did pretty well. She managed to take two issues that are viewed as her weaknesses and flip them into criticism of Trump. For instance, on immigration, when he brought that up, and many people view that as a real vulnerability, she turned the table and talked about how he killed the bipartisan immigration bill in the Senate that would have, many senators have said, really strengthen our ability to manage the border. And so instead of defending what had happened in the last 4 years or 3.5 years, she flipped the table and said that part of the immigration problem was caused by him because he stood in the way of that bipartisan bill. And then on the issue of America's withdrawal from Afghanistan, once again, she flipped the script and blamed some of the chaotic situation in that withdrawal on the deal that the Trump administration had negotiated with the Taliban. That's partly true and partly not true, but it was a pretty adroit deflection of that criticism that was, you know, could have been somewhat misleading, but she got away with it. The one thing I don't think, and there's a lot she had to try to do in a debate, and a debate format isn't great for this, but I think in reading about the meetings with undecided voters that were taking place simultaneously. She's got work to do. I don't know that certainly undecided voters came away with a clear understanding of what policies she would promote if elected. Some of them, yes, she did. She was very specific on, but there's still a lot of questions out there about her agenda, because it's when you're president, it's a big and broad agenda. So she's got work to do.
Sure. And Ron, let's turn to you for your assessment of how Donald Trump did. He's known to all of us at this point, so he didn't have to sort of, show who he was, but his job was mostly to, as Jean said, hit Harris on her vulnerabilities. And then, the biggest challenge for him, I think, was he was charged with not to get riled up by her. So how did he do on all of that?
The former president had a bad night last night. I have to imagine that the point that he hit in his closing statement was supposed to be his leitmotif for the whole night. You're part of the Biden administration. You've been there for 3.5 years. If you really want to be an agent of change, why haven't any of these things happened? But instead, he rose to a number of different kinds of bait. He talked about rallies. He refused to acknowledge losing the election in 2020. And then he hit on some of the stories, which I think on friendly media territory for him probably seemed like a safe bet. The claims about immigrants eating and stealing pets, or what he said about Democrats and Democratic-run states supporting infanticide. And the result was that instead of trying to redefine Harris or to define her before she had a chance to define herself, he wound up sort of giving us a tour of some of his more unhinged recent claims.
Yeah, so you mentioned some that might fit into my next question, which would be for each of you to name either the best or worst moments for each of the candidates that stood out or something, whether it's a gotcha thing or just, the quality of their answers. So, Jean, what stood out for you?
Well, I am befuddled by Trump picking up on the false claims of immigrants eating pets. It's so extreme, and it's not true, and he should have known it's not true. He said he saw it on television. I don't know, does that make it true? That was one of the rare moments where the ABC panelists, had to speak up and say it wasn't true. But it's so distracting. And I don't know how that appeals to the independent voters who may be undecided, or the suburban women who he needs to win back. I think, as was noted, by Ron, I mean that's red meat for his base supporters. He doesn't need to appeal to them. He needs to appeal to a broader net. And I just don't know why he even goes down those roads, because he's smart enough about, moving public opinion and making an appearance like this on television to know how it's going to be received. I just don't get that.
Yeah, what about you, Ron?
I completely agree. I think that the abortion questions really represented a high for the vice president and a low for the former president. I think that Trump has been trying to sort of finesse the situation where he can reassure the anti-choice part of his base, while at the same time potentially reaching out to unaffiliated voters or to certain demographics that are very wary of the result of overturning Roe. And there are pluses and minuses to trying to speak to the latter group or to the former group, but instead he went into this monologue about babies being killed in operating rooms, which is untrue and was at best bizarre and ghastly. While the vice president was able, I think, to shift away from some of her early comments, which sounded a little bit pre-canned, to something that sounded a lot more personal, a lot more emotionally real, I guess you might say. And the Trump administration, the former president, in his speech when he was inaugurated, draws this picture of American carnage, and his depictions of the United States can sometimes be really dystopian and grim. But the true stories that Harris was able to talk about of women almost bleeding out in their cars, of children being forced to carry a rapist baby to term, give a much more compelling and awful and I think verifiable depiction of a grim reality than anything that the former president could offer.
Yeah, and the overriding, a lot of the reaction to the debate too is simply, how they compose, how composed they were, how their demeanor was, and a lot has been said of how Kamala Harris succeeded at getting under his skin, getting and pushing his buttons. And so I just wanted you both to talk about that a little bit. You know, if the goals of this were beyond just what they said, but how they said it. She worked in the word weak whenever she could. She worked in the jab about his rallies and about him, being laughed at by other leaders and things that are well known to irk Donald Trump. So, Jean, talk about that a little as a strategy and whether that really was kind of a, it was actually kind of a dominant feeling throughout the debate.
Yes, it was. And clearly, that was their strategy. And I think she implemented it pretty effectively. And Trump just kind of took the bait. He can't really help himself. Anytime you talk about the size of his crowds at rallies, he will answer. You know, he'll go after that to try to combat it for reasons that aren't quite clear. And so, she did, you know, she knew, they knew what buttons to push. They pushed them. He reacted. One thing I did think that Trump did somewhat effectively, at least at the start of the debate, was pretty much any the abortion issue is a fraught one for him. He's taken way too many positions on it, moved around, so he's very hazy and on that issue for voters. But when that issue came up, to the extent that he could, he almost consistently pivoted back to immigration. So he was, you know, trying to like get away from what he knows is not a good issue for him and turn the subject back to an issue that they, is perceived as a weakness for her. Trump did that a couple of times. I think that was his strategy for part of the debate, and I think he executed it. Some of the segues may not have made a whole lot of sense, but it, his intent was to put her on her back foot, and I think that you know it was a good strategy for him to try to employ.
Yeah, and Ron, I'm curious about, a lot of this is sort of we're watching the results of their debate prep, right? The way that Kamala answered questions, you said a lot of them were kind of canned. You knew they had prepped her to the hilt to have certain things that she was going to say and just say them and not get distracted, and that she was very disciplined in that. You knew that Trump had that technique, drilled into him, pivot to immigration if you get stuck, right? So I'm just curious, with all of that prep, was it not possible for them to prep Donald Trump to not take the bait?
To a certain degree, but I mean, part of the persona of Donald Trump, and part of what I think appeals to members of his base, is this idea that of you know, let Trump be Trump, but that he has these particular inclinations and gut responses that he'll follow. And I don't think that there is anybody who could convince him to not rise to an attack if he feels like it touches on one of his more defining aspects, like business acumen or like being strong. And once Harris began to really hit those points, I don't think any amount of prep really could have kept Donald Trump on message.
And I'd agree with Ron on that, in also because when he defends his rallies. I think he's defending his supporters, and I think that's how they view it. So it's like they're on the same team, and that's how he has kept the kind of movement of Trump followers in his camp, because he treats them as being on the same team. And so when the rallies and the rally attendees are criticized or minimized, then he's going to step in and defend them.
Yeah. And Jean, you made mention of ABC News and their role in this debate. And so let's just take a moment to talk about, the debate format for this one was there was no audience, and then there were the muted mics when the other person was talking, and no handlers there. So, Jean, how do you feel that worked, and how did it change this debate from others?
Yeah, I think that ABC is kind of the winner of this debate, only because these events are extremely difficult to manage for the moderators, because both camps want to bend the rules or stretch them if they can, if they're going to get an advantage. And some of the prior appearances were criticized because there was no fact checking. Some people in other, not necessarily debates, but in interviews or public appearances have been criticized as, being too critical and doing too much fact checking. So somewhere a happy medium had to be found. And I felt like last night they got there. There were, three, four times where they fact checked, the former president. They could have done it 20 times. There were plenty of other areas that they could have checked. But they kept it at a minimum. They kept it short. They kept it factual, and they moved on. And, it seemed to me to be the right blend of managing that. I also felt like they came out and they put immigration on the table first. And that's her weakness. Not necessarily his. Then they move to abortion, his weakness. So again, balancing the way that they approached the topics was also, I thought, pretty well done.
What did you think, Ron, as far as not only the format but the fact checking? I mean, there's conservative point of view is the fact checking was very biased in favor of Vice President Kamala Harris, and not fair to former President Donald Trump.
I think that, I mean, the examples of Harris saying something that needed a fact check are pretty standard political stuff. You round up numbers, you exaggerate a point, but some of what the former president was saying was just made up stories. And I think that they did a good job of targeting the most outrageous ones and just giving as Gene said, a quick correction. And making sure that at the very least the audience was aware of the fact, the viewing audience, that these things were untrue.
And I think also that the challenge they had with correcting the vice president is that she didn't, as Ron said, she didn't say things that are like clear cut, flat out wrong. She said things that were misleading. And that's a lot harder to kind of correct. Like I mentioned on Afghanistan, it is correct that the Trump administration negotiated the deal with the Taliban, and that is what the Biden administration inherited. But should they also now be held responsible, though, for all the chaos and the manner in which they executed that deal? They should be. But she just ignored kind of that part of it and focused on who negotiated the agreement. So she wasn't wrong, but she did successfully change the subject.
Sure. Well, lots more to talk about, but we do need to take a quick break. We are talking about last night's presidential debate. Give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. We have political experts with us today to analyze last night's debate. With me are Ron Schmidt. He's a professor and chair of political science at the University of Southern Maine. And Gene Cummings is the former deputy bureau chief in Washington for the Wall Street Journal. Join the conversation. Share your reaction to the debate and how the candidates sounded and the points they made on policy issues. Email us at talk@mainepublic.org or comment on Facebook or Instagram or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. I'm going to read an email here from Bruce. I am stating up front that I am an independent, but I lean toward the right on issues. ABC face-planted completely on this event. They failed constantly in controlling things. What did they mean by saying microphones would be controlled to keep things on track? The Trumpster fire babbled on and on like he has with no control. They even turned on his mic to let him pretend to reply when all he wanted to do was keep talking and continue lying about something other than the question on the table. Harris was not strong or blunt enough. The Dems have been missing their opportunities to say, you are lying right now, and this is a crazy internet rumor. So, Ron, Bruce raised a lot of things that you touched upon already. He felt that ABC's format didn't work in this case and that a lot got through that shouldn't have.
Yeah, I don't think that we disagree about the facts, generally speaking, of the situation, but maybe just more our reading of it. I think that the job that that ABC had to do was incredibly difficult. And I think given that, and on top of the other things that Gene has touched on too, just the fact that they are so much under fire from all quarters right now for their ability to do the job, that what they managed was, I think, was a victory.
Okay, Gene, Yeah.
Sorry, that's not just how hard it was.
I wanted to see if we can have time to get to some of the actual issues and how they address them. So, Gene, the economy is supposed to be a topic that Trump had going for him for some of those on-the-fence voters, especially viewing him as, you know, I guess blaming the Biden administration for inflation and gas prices. So he started early in the debate making one of his stronger cases of the night. He was composed and talking about the economy, but then sort of lost that thread later on, didn't hit Kamala Harris very much on that effectively. Is that what your take would be?
Yes, I do think that was a goal that his campaign definitely had in mind. I thought he started out, you know, making a forceful case that the economy was better during his administration. She managed to undercut him, though, by pointing out how once COVID struck, you know, the economy froze. And she and Biden inherited ultimately a very weak economy that needed a lot of attention to recover. And that distracted him. And I mean, his mission should have been to stay focused on that. But he did become distracted by the issues that she raised, which is what was her goal.
All right, let's go to a call now from Nigel, who's calling from Newcastle. Hi, Nigel. Go ahead. What did you want to talk about?
Good morning. Well, as you can probably tell from my accent, I'm an immigrant. I've been in the States for 46 years, 33 of them in Maine. I think I've made a significant contribution to our local societies where I've lived. Other than indigenous people, we're all immigrants or descendants of immigrants. And I'm every time I hear Trump speak, I'm utterly appalled by his demonizing of immigrants, his destructive messages, his attempt to set us all against each other, and the tissue of lies he associates with immigrants. And every time he opens his mouth, he indicates why he's just simply not suited for any kind of office, public office, let alone president of the U.S.
All right, Nigel, thanks for sharing your thoughts. And Ron, immigration, again, that was an issue where Trump did, former President Trump did come back to it several times because that is something that is seen as another vulnerability for Kamala Harris. And but as Gene pointed out before, he sort of, you know, kept using that as his pivot point. How effective was his position on immigration?
I think to some degree, this is one case where Harris's offering of things to distract Trump may have actually worked to Trump's own advantage, because he pivoted away from the question of how his deportation plans would work. And I think any straightforward accounting of that would be ghastly. I mean, as Trump himself has acknowledged, it would be a very bloody story of concentration camps and forced deportations. Beyond that, I think I talked about how the vice president had these sort of canned responses or answers, like about being from a middle class family, and that she really wants to reiterate that to set up a political identity for herself. And the former president does too, but some of his canned answers are designed, I think, for friendly right wing media, and those can sound very, very different in the context of, say, for example, the kind of debate that ABC held last night. The comments about, again, stealing pets and eating them. It's easier to see how that's not just not a bizarre claim, but how it's actually part of a larger pernicious narrative.
And Jean, did you feel like Vice President Kamala Harris was able to answer questions about border security successfully?
No, that's why I think she's got work to do. I think she did a really good job of deflecting, but she's got more explaining to do. I mean, I think what you could take away maybe from the night is that she'd want to return to the bipartisan bill that was negotiated in the Senate and try to get it passed. And by all accounts, Democrats and Republicans in the Senate did feel that that bill would be an improvement. It would get more people, more authorities and law enforcement down there. And that's one of the big problems, is that it's not staffed as robustly as it should be. The immigration court system is woefully overrun and desperate in need of reinforcements. And the bill would have addressed some of those issues. But the voters don't know that, or not much of it, probably not any of it, because that bill never really passed. And so, coverage was fleeting. So I think she, referred to the desire to see that legislation come into being, but she's got work to do in explaining, okay, what's in it, how will it help, and how will it deter illegal immigration? She's got work to do.
Ron.
I think Jean's right, and I think that's particularly telling, because this has been a struggle for President Biden as well. He's actually managed to get a lot of money spent, a lot of boots on the ground, a lot of programs moving, particularly on projects like infrastructure. But it's never been a strength of President Biden to find a way to explain what he's doing in a clear fashion or a persuasive fashion to large numbers of his fellow citizens. And you'd think that Harris would want to be working a lot harder on making sure that that's not a point of continuity with her predecessor.
Okay, thanks for your call, Nigel. And there's an email here from S. Mr. Trump appeared to have no logistical step-by-step whatsoever for a plan to handle deportation of millions. It's hard to visualize how it might be done and is staggering to imagine what it might cost. However, it seems possible that his desire is to be in command of a huge military, National Guard, and police force, perhaps for other purposes. So lots to say about that. Let's go to let's see. Tony is calling in from Yarmouth. Hi, Tony. What did you want to talk about?
Hi. I was looking at the debate last night through the eyes of somebody living in the 2nd District, Bangor, Brewer, up in the county, Washington County. And what I heard, particularly when it came to immigration, was the threat that Trump poses to migrant labor. We've got cauliflower, we've got potatoes, we've got blueberries, and that entire economy really relies on immigrant labor. And what I see in Trump is that he really just wants to shut it down. He wants to shut down our borders, period. He is not friendly toward immigration or immigrants, period. It's a white nationalist and evangelical agenda that he's running. So that, you know, that to me is a real game changer for people in the second district. And for them, I think the choice should be pretty clear.
Thanks for your comments, Tony. Ron?
That's an excellent point, I think. That, I mean, this has long been a tension, primarily with the GOP, but also in the Democratic Party, between people who want to restrict immigration and people who basically count on the big role played in our economy by transitory labor. And I think that the Trump immigration image of the of deportation, mass deportations, and the sort of Stephen Miller fondness for images of workers being led out of businesses takes very much one side of that relationship and would have a massive effect in, among other things, the ability of people to count on having food for their table, or the ability of farmers to kind of being able to sell produce before it rots.
Okay, I'm going to move over to a question for Gene about Vice President Kamala Harris and her stance on Israel. That's seen as something very dicey for her to navigate, being part of the current administration and yet trying to set herself apart from President Biden. So can you comment on how that topic was covered?
Yeah, I mean, she said the appropriate things, that there's, you know, you need to allow Israel to defend itself. And she did say, you know, we would too. I mean, this was Israel's 9/11. And I think that is a way to appreciate and bring home a little bit what Israel confronted almost a year ago. And then also express, you know, great empathy and sympathy for the innocent Palestinians who are now suffering under the weight of this battle, of these battles and this war. But that's kind of rote. It's safe. And, you know, she walked that line. Trump's not in a very good position to challenge that. So she wasn't pushed on it very hard. But I still contend that the parents of that poor young American who most recently was killed with other hostages, that they addressed this topic better than anyone I've ever heard. And what they really, I thought, conveyed is that there is enough grief and sorrow and sadness to go around, that nobody's coming out of that situation without a great deal of pain.
Ron, do you think on that issue, the many young voters who are disenchanted with President Biden over his position on Israel, whether Kamala Harris has distinguished herself enough to win their support?
I honestly don't know. Gene is right. The framing of, you know, too many innocent Palestinians have died, it's true, but it also could sound formulaic. And I don't know if that is enough for young voters. I don't see a large segment of the young Democrat voting for Donald Trump, of course, but I could see some of them deciding to not participate on that basis. So that's a possibility, but I honestly wouldn't guess at this point.
Okay, well, we have lots to talk about still about the impact of the debate and what it will mean for voters. We are going to take another quick break. We want to have you share your thoughts about the debate as well. Our phone number is 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. We are talking about the presidential face-off in Philly. How did Donald Trump and Kamala Harris perform? Joining me, Gene Cummings, former Deputy Washington Bureau Chief for the Wall Street Journal, and Ron Schmidt, political science professor and chair at USM. Share your comments and questions. Email us at talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram, and you can also call 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to a caller now. This is Philip calling in from Mapleton. Hi, Philip.
Hello.
Go ahead. What do you want to talk about?
Well, I watched the debate last night with great anticipation, and I was very disappointed. To me, it was very dull. It may have been that the microphone situation, but they didn't show me very much.
And Philip,
were disappointed.
Were you eagerly anticipating it to help you decide how to vote, or just as entertainment, or what was it that you were looking for out of it?
Basically, about like most people, I think it was entertainment. I think most people have, I don't think any minds were changed. I was, however, disappointed in Harris. She didn't show me much. Trump, of course, was Trump. But I don't think that it would change many minds. It didn't me. It was disappointing.
Okay. Well, thanks for bringing that up, Philip. I do want to talk to our panelists about the impact of the debate and whether it might change minds. That's always the big question, for all that we dissect. What will this mean for voters? So, Gene, just traditionally, whether it's this debate or any, how much can the needle be moved for voters?
Well, I think we saw earlier this year that a bad debate can be fatal. And Biden had a bad debate and he's no longer the nominee. But that's a pretty extreme example. So you need to kind of be that bad to have a real impact, a measurable impact. Debates can provide a little momentum. They can shift the race some, but with the races close, every shift matters, but everything is going to be in small degrees. I appreciate that the caller found the debate dull. I think if I were head of ABC News, I would call that my major victory, given that we've seen so many disasters. moderators just lost control of their own event. But I also, as I said earlier, I do think she's got work to do. I mean, she mentioned providing a larger child tax credit and a tax credit for small businesses and assisting first-time home buyers. She got some policy in there. But, and a debate may not be the format for this, but I do think that's the area where she's got a lot of work to do, because Trump, as the caller said, is being Trump. But she's got to try to win over the suburban voters who crossed partisan lines to vote for Biden. Biden had a very robust and specific agenda, and I appreciate that she's trying to find her own space. But she's got a lot of work to do to communicate who are you and what are you going to do? I mean, she, I think, showed that she could stand toe-to-toe with the president and manage herself. So, okay, that's one bar she had to get over. But she's still got a lot of messaging that she has to get out to those voters who are gettable, the Haley voters, the people that they are targeting.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was kind of toggling channels, and I think NBC was talking to some actual Pennsylvania voters who were on the fence. Three people who were, ambivalent, maybe even didn't personally like Donald Trump, but, still looking for answers on the economy. And what was so interesting, I know this was just three people, but two out of the three afterwards, even though they felt that Kamala Harris performed better, we're still on the fence. that seemed indicative of how, the debate performance might not really push that extra, make that extra push for somebody. Is that Is that true, Ron, you think?
Yeah, you know, when we answer the question of whether a debate is going to fulfill its job, we have to be clear what debates can actually do. And we tend to think about persuasion, and they're not actually great at that. they might make a very, very minimal shift. And of course, you know, in a race that could be this close in a small number of states, that's nothing to sneeze at. That could be decisive. But more, it's a question, I think, of on the one hand, sort of morale, you know, the question of whether or not Trump's base or Harris's base is going to feel more mobilized, more excited, more energized about what they saw. But also debates in a system like ours are they're a part of representation. A candidate comes and talks about the things that they support and what they want to achieve. And then voters can sort of hold them to account on that if they win. And the vice president gave us some things, you know, the small business and the new families, and that was sort of part of her autobiography, but not a lot of specifics. And Donald Trump didn't offer much in the way of specifics either. It reminded me of in 2020 when he had trouble answering the question of what he wanted to achieve if he won a second term. So as regards to that, the debate was a bit unsatisfying. Yeah.
Yeah, but you did make mention that it's so close that who knows if this little bit of a difference can make, you know, can change things. And that brings to mind, Taylor Swift has endorsed Kamala Harris. And as we all know, she has millions of followers, and Swifties, you know, paying close attention to what she says. And, you know, she signed it off as childless cat lady, just for extra oomph. So Gene, this is, you know, she's a pop star, but she's influential. Is with the closeness of this race, could that actually do something?
Well, maybe. I mean, yes and no, right? I think given that she endorsed Biden 4 years ago, everyone, including Trump, was expecting an endorsement of Harris. But what might make more of a difference is that there is an organization that has cropped up. I think they call themselves Swifties for Harris. These are her fans, and they're doing voter registration. Now, that could make a difference. That's real work. That's in important states. And as both Ron and I keep saying, in a close election, everything matters. So the endorsement itself, not a shocker, but the fact that some of her fans have actually rolled up their sleeves and started doing the hard work of grassroots politics, that could be important.
It's true. About a third of that endorsement message was about just register to vote, whatever it is you decide to do with that. And that's a really important message for her to get out. So,
yeah. And she said, do your research as well, which was a wise thing to say. I'm going to try. We have so much coming in. I'll try to read some emails and go to some calls. So email from Scott said, it seems much less a debate than a personal infomercial. And email from Todd, as independents, we're still undecided after the debate, but it did remind us, and we had kind of forgotten, just how exhausting Trump is. It's probably why he lost to Biden in 2020. We're all just so exhausted of hearing him spew. And an email from Mary, Kamala Harris missed chances to reveal Project 2025, written by 142 of Donald Trump's past employees and other supporters. Forward written by J.D. Vance. Instead of asking him, what is your plan? Many people do not know what's in it, and it was a missed opportunity. So lots of reaction there from our listeners. And let's go now to Lisa calling in from Georgetown. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now. What did you want to say?
Okay, great. Thanks for taking the call. First, let me say I wouldn't vote for Trump if he was running unopposed. I find him dangerous and offensive. But I'm a little discouraged with Kamala Harris's message, which tends to focus on the cash, the rebate that she would give families with young children and the small business tax break and some mortgage assistance. But there's a whole demographic of our population that she seems to have omitted the elderly people who can't pay property taxes, folks who can't pay medical bills, the escalating cost of housing and housing purchases. I know that she's talked about some loan assistance for young people purchasing first-time housing, but all of those things are out of control, and doesn't seem that she addresses those when she offers her ideas for change, and that is concerning to me.
Okay, thanks for sharing your thoughts on that, Lisa. Jean sort of picks up on what you said earlier.
Absolutely. As I said right from the get-go of our discussion here, she has work to do. Anybody who's running for president generally has a big, broad platform, because running the United States is a big, broad job. And she needs to fill in details now for folks like our caller, who they have questions. And, you know, Harris may have a whole agenda on how to help senior citizens get by, but we don't know what it is, or it's on us to go find it. That's mm-hmm. the opposite of what should be happening.
Yeah, she said multiple times, I have a plan, I have a plan. But that's kind of where it stopped. So let's go to Sue calling in from Bethel. Hi, Sue, go ahead.
Hi, how are you? I just want to say policy cannot be explained in a 30-second soundbite on TV. It just doesn't happen. But my other question is, why are people not more enraged about Project 2025? That is the real threat to our democracy.
Okay, thanks for bringing that up, as one of our emailers did as well, Sue. Ron, you know, Kamala Harris did mention Project 2025 a couple times during the debate, and Donald Trump disavowed it. Where should this be more of the conversation?
I mean, what the, you know, the back in 2020, the GOP didn't even really specifically have a platform going into the election. So there's a sort of policy of vagueness about what plans the GOP has. I think if there were a platform, you know, an official Republican platform out there, it'd be easier to let Trump say, well, 2025 isn't actually officially my document, so that's not my business. But since we have nothing official really to go on from his campaign, I think we have to pay attention to the stuff coming out from people who are close to him and who advise him and who are members of various interest groups that were important in his first administration. And I think that does demand a great deal more attention than it's getting.
Hmm. Okay, let's squeeze in another call. Sandy is calling from Waterville. Hi, Sandy.
Good morning, and thanks for this panel. I think it's been very interesting. I noted during the event last night and during and reading comments this morning that the former president spoke 5.5 minutes more than Vice President Harris spoke, and that was because he kept insisting on speaking and David Muir kept letting him speak. I'm wondering what the panel thinks of that, and also whether, in fact, in some ways that didn't play into Vice President Harris, because in my view, that debate was all about whether people could see the difference between them in terms of their personalities, and it became very clear in looking at who was interrupting and who wasn't interrupting.
Yeah, interesting take on that, Sandy. Jean, was it within the rules that he was getting this extra time?
Yeah, the rules became a little bit vague from we're going to mute the mics when your time is done, to, well, we may open the mics if it is a meaningful exchange that is taking place. And they did unmute the mics a couple of times. Given the reaction that and how people have assessed the debate performance of the two of them, I don't think Kamala Harris wants those 5 minutes back. Mm-hmm. I think the whole point in her campaign arguing to not mute the mics was to try to take advantage of Donald Trump's tendency to go on and say things unpredictable. So, you know, he did plenty of that last night, and I'm sure the Harris campaign was fine with that.
Mm-hmm. A very strategic move in that way. Thank you for that question, Sandy. And unfortunately, we're out of time. We will see if there is another debate or not. That I guess that's being discussed. But thank you both for joining us today. Ron Schmidt is chair of the Department of Political Science at USM, and Gene Cumming is former Deputy Bureau Chief in Washington for The Wall Street Journal. Today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy. This show is part of Maine Public's Your Vote 2024 coverage. Tomorrow on the show, we will learn about sustainable forests and what's being done to manage Maine forests wisely. I'm Cindy Hahn, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.